Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Here's the podcast for Live the Promise. Enjoy the conversation. Much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and this is Live the Promise, and we are here to help you engage in a strong and active walk of faith. Really glad you tuned in today. Hope it's been a great day so far. Well, we know for those committed to their freedom that on the other side of their addiction is a powerful story of redemption. But how can we demonstrate Christ's love and compassion for a loved one who's struggling while still creating healthy boundaries for ourselves? Well, my guest today is Stephen Arterburn, and he joins me to talk about his book, one in a series of really great books. This one's titled Understanding and Loving a Person with Sexual Addiction, Biblical and Practical Wisdom to Build Empathy, Preserve Boundaries, and Show Compassion. And as you can imagine, this show, this particular conversation may not be suitable for younger ears. So just a heads up, if you got little ones in the room, maybe get them busy doing something else. I have a quick announcement before we get Steve on. Our Spring Share event begins tomorrow, and just want to say ahead of time, your generous support helps us continue to grow to reach people for Christ around the world, and especially in the upper Midwest. We've got a strong presence in the upper Midwest. You can start, get a jump start if you want to partner with us right away. You can give safely and securely online on our website, myfaithradio.com, or call during one of our non-live show hours, safe and secure, 877-933-2484, and you can make your pledge. Just want to say thanks in advance for your generous gifts. We are so excited about what God is doing. We can't do it without you, and we absolutely wouldn't want to. Let me tell you about my guest. We'll get him on the show. Stephen Arterburn is founder and chairman of New Life Ministries. He hosts the number one nationally syndicated Christian counseling talk show, New Life Live, and it's heard and watched by over 2 million people each week on over 150 stations. He also hosts New Life TV and is the founder of Women of Faith conferences attended by over 5 million women. He's nationally and internationally known as a public speaker and has been featured in all the national media you can imagine, and we're so honored to have him with us today. Dear Stephen, welcome back to the show.
Well, it's great to be here, Susie. Always enjoy being with you and the folks that listen to you. It's a great privilege, and we're talking about a topic today that if anybody thinks it's irrelevant, well, they obviously haven't been watching much news lately.
Right. Indeed.
Things going on in our society, sadly, because it's absolutely everywhere.
Indeed. And I always appreciate you, Steve. You don't shy away from tough topics, and we're going to be digging in here in a moment. And as you know, having been on the show plenty of times, we love to start by talking scripture. And this doesn't even have to tie to content. It just can tie to you as a man of God. Have you been thinking about a passage these days that you can share with us, or one that ties to what we're talking about today?
Well, if you look in Ephesians 5, you'll see this amazing verse that it encourages us. It depends on the translation you look at. The one I like the best, it says to not let there be even a hint of sexual immorality in your life. What a standard that is for us. And, you know, I've dated, I've been tempted, and I know you can go through all sorts of rationalizations about what you do and what's okay, and it's a modern world and all of that. But I was just talking to someone who said, wow, you know, the world is so different for millennials. And I said, well, the world is different for millennials, but the truth of God has been around for millennia, and that has not changed. And if a person is committed to not let there be a hint of sexual immorality in their lives, it is nothing but, I mean, it sounds a little bit trite, but it's nothing but upside. There's nothing but good news when you make that your standard, whether you're single or married or whatever situation you're in. That's the standard that you want to adhere to.
Boy, I love that. Not even a hint. It's in Scripture to consider what that means. Well, you sort of answered this before I even asked this question, but I'd still love for you to expound on it a bit. You know, as a host of the number one rated counseling show, how often do you hear about issues regarding sexual addiction?
Well, we hear about it all the time, and every day. I mean, literally, this is true. We could every call we take, it could be about that. We have to screen our calls, but it is so prevalent, and you know, it's not just in Hollywood; it's in our churches too, and people struggle with different degrees of it. Now, when Fred Stoker and I wrote Every Man's Battle, we made a point that people would know that this was not a book about sexual addiction. And so Jason Martinkus and I have come along and we've created this book, which is about sexual addiction. And the good news is, whether you're talking about sexual immorality or sexual addiction, the cure or the way to work with it or treat it, it's the same. It's no different, because a lot of people think that if you use the word addiction, you're eliminating the word sin. Well, that's just not true. I've never known an addict who wasn't deeply involved in sin of some kind, nor have I ever known a sinner who wasn't addicted to their favorite little, quote-unquote little, sin. So addiction and sin go together. What addiction does is it puts it into a classification that is a little bit different than a one-time sin. If I just say I sinned, I can repent, I can feel bad. If it's just a sin, maybe I'll never do it again. Maybe the temptation won't even be very great to do it again. But if I take on this word addiction, what I'm saying is, hey, I've got a recovery program I need to do. I've got, you know, I don't have a problem. The problem has gotten a hold of me, and I'm going to have to do more, much, much more than that person who says, well, I just have a little sin problem. So it's a pretty big responsibility, not a cop-out, when a person says, I have an addiction problem.
And Steve, you mentioned this in the book as well, that some, maybe it's oftentimes the spouses that kind of resent it being called an addiction, as if it absolves them from responsibility. Like, if you're saying you have a sickness, then you're not responsible for all that you've put me through. And you kind of debunk that myth as well, don't you?
Well, look, when a person is choosing to get involved with something, and they get involved, and for whatever reason, doesn't really matter, but for whatever reason, it becomes an addiction, and it's not something that they can just wake up in the morning and say, okay, I'm done with that. It really has a hold on them. Well, when you begin to recover, that doesn't absolve you of any responsibility. In fact, one of the hallmarks of recovery is a person making a list of the people that they have harmed and going back to them, not just saying, well, I'm really sorry about this, but going back to them and trying to make restitution for it. And so anybody that, let's say a husband would have a problem and he would go get some help, and then he would come back from that help and say, well, looks like I had an addiction. I'm not really responsible for what I did. Well, first of all, I would say he's lying to you. He didn't really get help, or he didn't listen to what the help was actually saying, because that isn't the way it works. We're still responsible for our behavior, and you can't use addiction as an excuse for anything. In fact, there's so much help available, it's a mystery why more people aren't recovering from whatever addiction or compulsion or dependency that they have. So what we're about at New Life, and what this book is about, recognizing what the problem is, trying to find the solution, and then engaging in that solution. No excuses accepted. Got to get over it, got to get with it, got to transform from it, no matter what the source of it is.
So, Steve, we've got about a minute or two before our quarter-hour break here, but it was interesting that you addressed this in the book as well, that sexual addiction is not limited to just men, is it?
No, and in fact, my wife, she facilitates a group at our church. I'm a teaching pastor at a large church here in the Indiana Indianapolis area called Northview Church. And she facilitates a recovery group, life recovery group, for women with sexual integrity problems. And many of them were introduced to pornography by a husband, and they're still struggling with it. Some have been in affairs and all that. So, no, it's not something that only men struggle with.
Hmm. Well, we're going to pause here talking to Steve Arterburn. Title of his book, Understanding and Loving a Person with Sexual Addiction. When we come back, we'll give kind of a synopsis of what sexual addiction is, but I'll give you a preview from the book, Compulsive, Mood-Altering, and Life-Disrupting. Compulsive, the person can't seem to stop even with the best of intentions. Mood-Altering, the person uses the activity to change the way he feels, especially to numb or escape painful emotions. And life-disrupting, it negatively impacts the person physically, spiritually, relationally, financially, and even professionally. Talking to Steve Arterburn, more with him in a moment. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to Steve Arterburn. He's got a series of books where he's addressing issues in a man and a woman's life, things that hold us back, hold us captive. Today, we're talking about sexual addiction. Title of the book is Understanding and Loving a Person with Sexual Addiction. And you co-wrote this with Jason Martinkus and his wife, Shelley, and they've got a story of their own, which we'll dig into in a bit. But Steve, you look at some of the descriptors of sexual addiction and how common it is. Here, one is compulsive. The person can't seem to stop, even with the best of intentions. Say a bit more, if you would.
Well, you know, a lot of times we are convicted by the Holy Spirit that, okay, there's something wrong here. It isn't going away. It's not getting better. But we really want it to be. And so we have an awareness, and many times, like I say, that awareness comes right directly from the Holy Spirit. And then we have this desire that we want it to change. So when it doesn't, then you have to say, well, wait a second. I have this awareness. I have this desire. I'm a Christian. I'm a believer. There must be something else here. And that's when we have to look at the power of addiction. Now, look. We all know what it's like to desire something and not be able to have it. Well, addiction is kind of in reverse. When you want recovery, you desire it, but you can't have it just by your own means, by your own willpower. And so that's why we've got to come alongside somebody, get some support, get some help, come out of our isolation. We've got to deal with the shame. And in the Christian community, addiction produces shame. You'd think, well, if you feel shame, you'd never do it again. But it's the opposite. It kind of drives you right back in to the problem. You want relief from it. So I just say to people, okay, what have you tried to stop whatever it is that you're doing? And in this case, what have you done to try to stop this lust, this obsession with the opposite sex or even the same sex or other things? And how has that gone? And when it hasn't gone well, when the result isn't changed, then we have to look at maybe this is an addiction. And then, you know, the other part of this is mood altering. You know, when you're looking at using a person or pornography or whatever as a way of getting out of the bad, horrible state that you're in, and you use it just like a drug. Well, that's what addiction is all about. You use it to change the way you feel or numb the way or escape from feelings. And then when you look at the impact, it disrupts your life. Maybe it's financially, maybe it's relationally, but you know that there's an impact. And Susie, I go back to, okay, well, what's the opposite of this? Well, the opposite of this is being able to keep a standard of sexual integrity that is this, that nothing I do, well, I could say it this way, everything I do sexually will be known by my spouse, will involve my spouse, and will be approved by my spouse. Now, if people would just stay inside of that boundary right there, boy, the world would be different. And then if you're not able to and you got help for the problem, the world would be different. But sadly, we end up, we're aware we have the problem and we want it to be better, but we're not willing to do whatever it takes. We're not willing to humble ourselves and get better. My wife and I, last week, we were on Family Life Today with Dennis Rainey, and they were really impressed with a term that she used, a term called humbling down. And that's what we need to do. Whenever we've got a problem, that just doesn't magically go away. We need to humble down and say, okay, where's the answer going to come from? Not from within me. Let's go find the place where I might be able to find some hope and healing. And that comes when, you know, we're not acting all like we can fix everything, but we're starting to humble down and look for the real source for help and healing.
Reminds me of a story in your book where this husband, I mean, I think there was some just a pulling away in the marriage. It wasn't going great. And then he connects with a woman at work. And first they just start sharing faith, and then they start to share their life, and then they shared a hug and then a kiss, and they were involved physically, and he couldn't stand it because he's a believer, so he cuts it off. He wants to come clean, and he says so with his wife, I think, in the context of counseling. I don't remember if it was you or with Jason, but she, like, dismissed it like it was not much of anything, and she was saying things to him that made no sense. And after delving deeper, you come to learn that she'd had multiple emotional affairs. She'd been in chat rooms, and she was an all-out sex addict, and she wasn't humbling down, so to speak. And then eventually she did. Once she got to the bottom of her stuff and was willing to own it all, then breakthrough happened. I mean, I wonder how often that happens, because if someone comes clean, the other one is not ready to do that because they have their own. There's a hint of sexual immorality in their lives as well.
Right. You know, there's this recovery phrase called my side of the street. And if we could all just do that, if we could work my side of the street fully and completely and not deal with the other person, everybody would get better. But a lot of times, you know, we say, oh, well, this person's the real bad guy here, or he was worse or whatever. And we live in denial about our own problems. And boy, does God ever want to just deal with each of us wherever we are, at whatever level we're experiencing a struggle. And so, you know, I just encourage people to do, you know, whatever it takes for you to get in touch with your, you know, your own brokenness, get in touch with what it is that you're doing, no matter why or whatever. If it's not building a connection with you and this other person, if it's not, you know, we call it New Life, we call it redemptive relationship. If the relationship isn't redemptive, then we got to do something to fix it. And maybe sexual addiction is the reason there's nothing redemptive about it.
Got about 4 minutes to our hard break at the bottom here, Steve. And wondering if you would need to take this onto the other side, please do. But I'd love for you to talk, just give some indicators of red flags for maybe someone. They would say, I'm not a sexual addict, and maybe they're not. Maybe they have sexual temptation and weakness, and there's some broken down places in their walls, so to speak. What would be some indicators that they're maybe nearing a slippery slope?
Well, you know, I would say that, first of all, we have to look at the word secret. A lot of people think, they rationalize that in a marriage or in a dating relationship that secrecy is okay. We have to have our own space and all that. But I disagree with that. So the first thing to do is ask yourself, are there things that I'm involved with that I keep secret from the person that I love? And so when we start to open up about whatever it is and deal with those secrets, then we can kind of look at, well, is this just a minor problem that I need a little counseling and correct, or is this something that I've actually been dealing with since childhood? And that's what we find so often, that a person, when they start to look at the truth, it's a childhood issue. It didn't just start after they got married. So the first thing is secrecy. The second thing is, you ask yourself this, is what I'm involved with, is it connecting or is it disconnecting? as a result of what I'm doing, am I moving closer to this other person? Am I growing deeper in this relationship? Or is this a disconnection here that I have? Does it provide a means of escape or relief from the relationship? So, I mean, those are two things, secrecy and disruption or disconnection. Very, very destructive. Why would you do that? If you wanted to give everything that you are in every way that you could to another human being and marry them, make them part of your lives, why would you do anything that would disconnect or harm that relationship? Well, maybe there's a force that's driving it. And whether it's addiction or not, don't wait to figure that out. Get some help if you're involved in secrecy or very disruptive and disconnecting behaviors.
Well, your co-author, Jason Martinkus, said that though people assume sex addicts are, or people who, I should say, struggle with sexual addiction, are, they tend to think that they're products of an abusive childhood. But he says that's not always the case. In fact, some who battle sexual addiction were actually raised in an ideal family situation. Say more about that.
Well, it's true. I mean, you're exposed to things after you're in a healthy relationship. And, you know, one of the things that we've talked about often here is that some people have such a great relationship and have a great growing up. They get married and they can't reproduce that. And they act out over how resentful they are that, you know, they can't make it as good as it was back with mommy and daddy. So we see people all the time that are raised in great homes, had the best possible upbringing, but they get exposed to something and it impacts them in a way that just latches onto them. And it doesn't have to be because they were abused in the beginning and it tapped into that. You absolutely can develop any kind of problem and come out of the best home ever. Children aren't robots, and we're not robots, and there's no way to raise a child that predicts 100% adherence to all of these great Christian values that we have.
Mm. When you think about kids who are your parents who are doing their best and they're raising these kids, and then you hear about a son or daughter who sees pornography on the playground because someone else brought it in, the sense of injustice and heartbreak is just mind-numbing. But that is the world we live in, isn't it?
Oh, it is. And the thing is, they're going to be exposed. And any parent that thinks, you know, my method is I'm just going to keep my child from seeing any of this stuff or be exposed, it's not realistic in this day and age. It is going to happen. And so we have to be prepared to help them deal with that and repair from it. Mm-hmm. And when we can do that, we've got a chance of seeing a child totally build on that exposure rather than let it take them down the wrong path.
Talking to Steve Arterburn, more with him, talking about his book, Understanding and Loving a Person with Sexual Addiction. We'll be back in a minute. Today, I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. Maybe you need a miracle in your marriage. Maybe your spouse is battling a sexual addiction, and maybe they're not even ready to admit that they have a problem. And what are you to do? We're going to talk about that in a moment. What's a spouse to do when you love someone who's got an issue and it's destroying you, and they're not even ready to look at it or admit that it's a problem? Well, I'm talking to Stephen Arterburn today. His book is titled Understanding and Loving a Person with Sexual Addiction. And your co-author, Jason Martinkus, and his wife, Shelley, are very honest, and they've helped countless people since they've seen the redemption in their own stories. But if you don't mind, tell us a bit about Jason and Shelley's story.
Well, Jason and Shelley are kind of typical couple. Get together, they have no idea what's going on with each other. And now Jason conducts our Every Man's Battle workshop that we do every month. And he is so powerful in his teaching because he's been there. And Shelley had no idea what was going on with him. But Jason was so into sexual addiction that there was hardly anything that he had not been involved with. And I'll just leave it at that. And so when a man comes to the Everyman's Battle workshop, he thinks, well, you know, nobody's going to understand my problem or whatever, or there's no hope for me, or I don't want to be there. Then they hear Jason's story. Well, they very quickly understand there's nothing that we can't deal with. Now, Shelley, you know, she didn't know what she was getting into until, you know, finally Jason did a full disclosure of all the things that he had been involved with. Well, now Shelley does a workshop called Restore for the spouses or girlfriends or ex-wives of sex addicts, and the healing there is so powerful. But if you met them, you would say, well, these are people that are very much like anybody else with the same kind of struggles that everybody else has. But what they've done is they've dealt with openly his addiction, her codependency, and then her journey. You know, we say that, yeah, you're in the relationship with this person, so the pain is, you know, you're experiencing it, you're feeling it. But it would have happened even if you weren't in that relationship. This addiction was going to develop no matter what. And so there's a lot of healing, and it was years before she could ever trust Jason again. And so because we have that experience in teaching people in the healing process, some guy that says, you know, I've been clean and I've been doing a good job here for 4 weeks and she's still not open to me, we're able to say, hey, wait a second. This isn't a week or a month thing. The amount of pain that's been caused here, this is going to take in some cases, a year, 2 years. But it may not take that long. It depends. But the point is, these are people that have been there, and now they're helping others. And the results are staggering that we get to see as people transform their lives.
Amazing. You know, it's really just kind of mind-boggling when you think of he was deviating on so many levels and things he never should have, of course. And yet when he was around her, he was doting, he loved her, he was fun-loving. But when he would indulge in some of these behaviors, he would take it out on her, and she never knew what hit her. She thought she was crazy. She's asking questions, and she thought that she needed to be more pleasing to him. She changed her wardrobe. And again, Steve, I wonder how many women are, like, scratching their eyeballs out going, I'm not enough, and I don't know what to do. But when he's not ready to admit it, he still makes her the problem for saying there's a problem, right?
Well, yes, and, you know, in working with sex addicts over the years, it is so common. Shelley's a very attractive person. It's so common that the wife is an extremely attractive person, but they don't feel that way because they'll say things like, well, if I'd been different or whatever. But it doesn't really matter, no matter how attractive they are, this happens. And here's a very weird thing. And that is that there is love for the spouse, even in the midst of this acting out. Now, I have been in a relationship where I was married to a sex addict who acted out. And it's very hard for me to hear that there was love there. Yeah. But in the case of a man especially, you know, we have this thing called compartmentalization. And we compartmentalize things. And we pull off into this little compartment this set of behaviors, open it up, we're involved with it, shut it up, and then go right back in as if nothing else is there. And it's just really weird the way a man's brain can work that way because it is so destructive. And he can go so long doing it because he puts it all away, shuts it all away in this compartment that he doesn't really address or look at at any other time. On our program, the saddest thing that we hear or that I hear are women that are married to a man for 20 years, and this is part of their history. And after 20 years, she's finally saying, I don't want to live like this anymore. And I wish 20 years ago, I could have talked with them, because they're, you know, that you can do something as a female or a man married to a sex addict. You can do something, but you have to be willing to do some uncomfortable things. And, you know, there's a wonderful proverb that says, when you wink at wrong, you cause trouble, but an open rebuke brings lasting peace. And so often people get confused and they think that God honors the peacekeeper. And so they'll wink at wrong, but God doesn't honor the peacekeeper. He honors the peacemaker. And sometimes you have to disturb the peace if you want to bring and make lasting peace. It's the only way that you can achieve that. And I know it's tough. It's not easy to look at a whole different world than just hanging on to what you've got. But when you're willing and you take the risk, you do the courageous thing, there is a whole other world that opens up to you.
Wow. Well, so Steve, let's say you're talking to a young woman who pictures herself 20 years from now going, okay, I'm done. Like, she's long suffered for 20 years. And you're saying, boy, if I could have gotten you back when you were younger. Well, now she is. She's listening today. What were some things that are some things that she should do right now?
Well, I would say this. If you're a young woman and you're dating and you're of a dating age where you might end up marrying the person that you're dating, the worst enemy I think that you have is desperation. And desperation has a cause for a female, and it's isolation. I sometimes sound like a broken record on New Life Live telling women, hey, you're married to this person because you didn't have these healthy taking truth into your life. They would have told you that this guy was more like an axe murderer than a Sunday school teacher, but you didn't have those people in your life. And so in your isolation, you slide into this relationship. You're having sex with this person. Now you think, oh, I've got to marry them because I've been having sex with them. And, or you're in trouble financially or whatever. And desperation makes the choice, not an inspiration from God that this could be a wonderful man, a wonderful husband. And so don't date if you don't have great women in your life that can speak truth to you, that you trust and that you'll listen to. And don't marry if there's any form of desperation in your life. Don't think that the marriage is going to fix it. In fact, it will make it worse.
Wow. Don't marry if there's any form of desperation in your life. I mean, that's an indicator that there's something wrong in the soul that we need to deal with. And, you know, it's interesting in your co-author Jason and his wife Shelley's story was that he discovered that this issue really wasn't about sex. She discovered that too. It's hard for her to believe that, but it was actually about longing to be known without being rejected. Is that often the case, Steve?
Oh, it is. I think there's so many men. They want acceptance. They want approval. They want an endorsement as a man. They want to feel like a man. None of it has anything to do with, I need to go have sex with somebody. But that's the path that they pick. They don't go down to the bar and get drunk or whatever. They pick this. And it gives them momentarily a false sense of relief or release or, you know, whatever it is that they're looking for. And it isn't quick for them to realize it. But once they realize that, hey, look at this. I've become a nightmare. I've become the thing that I never, ever wanted to be. When they can see that and accept that, then they can get some help. And the good news for folks is that if you'll both get help, you can end up with a relationship that you never dreamed. I remember having breakfast in the hotel with a couple, and the hotel was where he. And I said to the woman, how can you have breakfast with me and him here where he used to meet this woman? And this is where their affair took place. And she said, oh, well, they didn't ever have an affair here. That was the old man. that had the affair. But my husband became such a man of integrity. I trusted him so much that one day we decided to bury that old guy that had the affair. We buried him out back in the backyard. And we've got a little grave back there. And if I ever want to dig him up, we remind ourselves, no, we buried him, and we're not going to dig him up again. But that's the kind of change that can take place, where literally a wife can have breakfast in a hotel where they had the affair, because the guy that had that affair, he is no more. He has become the man of her dreams. That's what is possible, and that's what I believe in.
Boy, that's so good. Last break coming up in a couple minutes. Any other advice for the wife whose husband maybe isn't ready for integrity or isn't ready? He's still making excuses. What's some leverage? I mean, that, you know, healthy boundaries so that she's not a doormat being walked all over because of his addiction.
Well, of course, I want to see people come to the workshop because that's where most people get help. And what I encourage a woman to say to him, honey, you have ripped the dream of my heart. You have betrayed me, and it is like putting a knife into my soul. Isn't the least you could do to take 48 hours of your life and go to a workshop? Are you really going to tell me that after you have done the most hurtful, heinous thing that I never dreamed you would do, you're going to tell me you're going to pray more, read the Bible more? Honey, that is so insulting to me. Couldn't you humble yourself, get some help, and show me that you really do want to win my heart back? That's what I would say to her.
Wow. Well, let's pause here talking to Steve Arterburn. I want you to know we've got a couple copies to get into your hands if you want in on the drawing. Just email livethepromise@myfaithradio.com. Steve Arterburn book is probably the best way to do that. Title again is Understanding and Loving a Person with Sexual Addiction. When we come back, we're going to just hear a few stories of people whose lives have been redeemed and just more practical insight as to what to do if you're a spouse and you love someone who's battling a sexual addiction. What's a realistic recovery time? Stuff like that. We'll be back in a minute. Great song. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to Steve Arterburn. He's been on the show lots of times before. We're talking about a tough topic today and about his book, Understanding and Loving a Person with Sexual Addiction. And he hosts a number one counseling show, and people call in all the time. He said he could dedicate all of his time to this issue because it's so widespread. And Steve, thinking about ways a spouse can respond. And I know we're not just talking pornography. We're talking about sexual addiction, which can play out in so many ways. But I know that there are ways to respond and ways not to. And I remember hearing about a wife where the husband, humbly brokenhearted, came to her and said, I've been battling pornography. And she started screaming at him and calling him sex addict. And, of course, that was, you could imagine how horrified she felt. But I guess I'm just asking, what are some destructive ways to respond and some helpful ways to respond, even though we can't always control our emotions over this heated topic, but would love some advice in that regard.
Yeah, well, you know, having been betrayed, and not just once myself, one of the best things that was ever said to me was, you know, you're entitled to all the anger and rage. You're entitled to scream and yell all you want. But don't do it. Don't do it. You're entitled to know every detail about what happened, but don't ask for those details because they're going to hurt you. And so I would just say you need, if you discover somebody reveals to you that there has been a betrayal, you need to get some help, a great trusted friend, a counselor, a pastor, pastor's wife, somebody that can help you so that you can spew out all of that venom and that anger And no problem in being angry when you first hear something. That's, you're just being normal, just reacting the way anybody would. But you can't stay there. You can't stay in that every time you're together, you're bitter and resentful and angry. You've got to get a help from yourself, for yourself. And here's what happened. I thought it was so sad. When I was betrayed, not only did I have the pain of betrayal, but I had the pain of now having to forgive, having to go through that process. And it just, you know, it's, there's nothing fair about it. But if you'll do it, if you'll work through the grief, and grieving does, you have to grieve the loss of that dream and all the other stuff. If you'll do it on the other side, there's great hope and healing and freedom, and you're not going to stay the same forever. It's going to get better, but it is going to require work before it's going to get better.
Well, for those who didn't hear what you'd said prior to the break last time, that you'd said your first marriage, your wife was actually the one who has battled sexual addiction. And again, we make a stereotype that it's always men, but it just, especially in this day, is absolutely not always men. How did you heal from that and recover enough to be willing to get married again without having all kinds of fear?
Well, I had the best people around me. One of the things that happened, you know, I was with John Townsend and Henry Cloud on radio, and said to me, of course, they knew I was in counseling, I was getting help, I was healing. But they said, we've seen what you've been through, we've seen the pain that you've had, and we want you to commit to date 20 people before you would ever get married again. That just sounds
wow.
So weird, I know. But what they were saying was, we're afraid that the first person that's nice to you, you're just going to latch on to that person, and you're never going to see, you know, what might be best for you. The second thing was, putting me on that assignment guaranteed some time was built into the dating process, because, you know, too often people marry too soon. So I got help. I continue to have great friend counsel from them and others. And then I took my time. I, you know, once I started dating again, and the person I married was the third person that I dated. And I knew that she was the one, and she didn't want to be part of sitting around me dating a bunch of other people. And so we took a break, and then I fulfilled my promise to Henry and John. And what that did, not only was there time there, but I now have no doubt whatsoever that of all the people that I could be married to, I have a gift, and then she's the person that is best for me, and that there's redemption after all of this. And I think if you listen to our Family Life broadcast that was on last Thursday and Friday, you'd hear her and you'd say, wow, he did. He married a wise and deep and rich person. But it took a lot of time and a lot of work. And we had trouble even after we got married, after we did everything right. We didn't have sex before we got married. We tried to do everything right. But it's still, we had struggle and problems. But we knew how to repair it when it came along because of the work that we had done. So time, healing, God's grace, people around you, all of that versus quickly making a desperate decision. All of that is so important for anybody who's been hurt and trying to consider, you know, do I even meet the criteria that God sets out where I could remarry? You need to go very, very slow.
I love what you said earlier, too, that never get married with any kind of desperation in your life, But, wow, Cloud and Townsend impressed me. I would never think date 20 women is part of wisdom, but I can see the wisdom in it now after hearing your story. Wow.
No, and well, Henry wrote a book called How to Get a Date Worth Keeping, where he really puts forth that. And then I wrote a book, and I talk about it. You know, Henry really believes that one of the reasons that people struggle so much is that they are closed. And of course, I say to people, don't tell Henry and John that some of those 20 consisted of standing next to somebody at a Starbucks line and me saying, "Hey, how you doing?" But the point is, be open to other people, not afraid, and experience other people, different backgrounds. And then once you do marry again, if it's right for you to do so, it's going to be a much more secure experience. But yeah, it's a real, real great move. And sometimes it's a powerful move when people say, "You know what? I don't want to break up with you, but I think we ought to take a break and we ought to see some other people. We're either going to come back together more convinced than ever that we're meant for each other, or we're not going to come back together." And of course, that doesn't mean 20 romantic relationships. That isn't what I did. I didn't get involved with 20 people romantically. I just made myself available to have 20 experiences or 20 dates, and some of them not so much of a date at all.
Yeah, just Starbucks in the line. Check. Anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We just got about a minute before it's time to pray, and I doubt you can answer this in a minute, but for the spouse, for the wife, let's say, whose husband is going through some of these Every Man's Battle workshops, working into the healing process, what's a realistic timeline? Because I would imagine if she's thinking he's on his way, that he should have a perfect record, and that expectation could probably result in some disappointment.
Yeah, I would just say it's different for every person. And I would say in every case I'm aware of, it's months, not weeks. Sometimes it's years. But it depends on, you know, his consistency and clarity. He needs to become the most predictable person, never any question where he is, what he's doing. But also it has to do with how hard she works on her contribution. When my previous wife was unfaithful to me, I wanted everybody to know I was the good guy. But I had to come to grips with, hey, I was a donor in the problems of that marriage, and that was really when I began to heal.
Wow.
That takes time.
Steve, thanks so much for your honesty and your expertise. Appreciate you always when you join us on the show today. As we wrap, I'm wondering if you would pray for that couple listening today, whether it's the guy or the gal, but they're right in there, embroiled in this sexual addiction, and it's destroying their marriage. Would you pray for that couple, please?
Lord, I just pray for anybody that's struggling with addiction, that they will realize that just as you are powerful, Satan uses the power of addiction to keep people away from you, and that they would be willing to do whatever it takes to get that addiction or compulsion or dependency out of their lives. I pray for each person listening that they would leave this program with greater hope and healing and a path of righteousness that God will honor. And I ask it in your name. Amen.
Steve Arterburn, thank you for your time. I know you're a busy guy. Bless you for spending time with us today.
My pleasure, Susie. Let's do it again.
Let's do it again. And title of his book, again, is Understanding and Loving a Person with Sexual Addiction. You can email if you want in on the drawing. Email livethepromise@myfaithradio.com. Put Steve Arterburn in the subject line. Don't forget that mailing address. And you've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Susie Larson. In a bit, after the live show, you'll find a podcast on the web. You can share with anybody you think who needs it, right? And coming up next for Hour 2, Lee Strobel joins me to talk about his new book, A Case for Miracles. You think miracles still happen in our day? Well, first of all, they do. But we'll talk about all sides of that argument, why it's such a hot topic. More great conversation up ahead. Hour 2 is up next. We'll be back in a bit. Thanks for listening to this conversation from Live the Promise. These podcasts are available because of listener support. You can make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend. Help grow the impact of the show. Also, if you would, take a moment to subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player, and then never miss a show.